I'm Norman Gilliland. Welcome to the Midday for a Monday. I'm here in our Buck studio again. This time, for the third time, with a dazzling young pianist, Ariella Bowrod. And I hope you've gotten to hear some of her performances, either here on WPR or out and about in the community from time to time. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me back.
So this is where I ask, what have you been doing since the last time I saw you?
Where should I start? I have a lot of things, a lot of exciting things that have been happening over this year. I graduated from Interlochen Arts Academy last year, and I just finished my first year of college at Manis, the New School for Music in New York City. And that's been a whirlwind, moving to New York and finishing my first year of college, and it feels like time has just sped by.
So is there a particular emphasis at Manis?
Manis is all music. It's all classical and contemporary music. So I'm doing performance. Piano performance is my major, but there's also composition and any kind of music performance major. So all of my classes, for the most part, are music related.
And so how diverse are they? I mean, are they all piano or music theory classes, or you get to, study orchestral scores and
I think actually next year I'll be studying orchestral scores. But for the freshman year, it's more of like, I think, kind of the baby steps into getting your bachelor's of music. So I'm starting with music theory, and then there's ear training. I did counterpoint, which was a challenge because I'm not good at math, and that's kind of the math of music. That's the challenge for me.
A lot of people crack up on counterpoint, don't they?
Oh, I definitely did. No, I worked hard, though. I worked hard at it. I also take choir, so I'm in a larger ensemble. I am sorry for whoever has to sit next to me in choir and hear my voice because it's horrible, but I take that class. And then the rest of it is predominantly keyboard. So I've got keyboard skills and my private lesson and chamber music, but it's all based on music.
And so what is ear training exactly?
Ear training is being able to, I guess, simply put, recognize melodies by ear and be able to kind of sing them back or play them back. It's just really just training your ears exactly how it sounds. But also at Manis, we do something a little bit different, which is we do a lot of score reading. So this year I learned how to read, I think it was 7 or 8 different musical clefs.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of what I'm used to is just, treble
and
bass.
Yeah.
But I had to learn how to read the other ones as well.
And what, as a pianist, what's the advantage, do you think?
As a pianist, well, we should also know how to read orchestral scores, so that's going to help me next year. I'll be able to read the different clefs that the other instruments will have to read in the orchestra. It can't hurt.
Some
of the clefs I think that we learned, I don't know if I'm ever going to have to read horns and F, but I know how to, just in case.
But I suppose if you were, say, performing with a violist, like a violist sonata, it would help for you to know
Definitely.
What that person is actually looking at on the
because
score.
Because that's what we do as a pianist when we're accompanying someone or collaborating. We have to be able to follow their lines at all times, not just our own. Even though we're playing our own part, it's a unified act that we're doing. So I have to be able to follow their part as well as mine.
So do you have a sense, at the end of a first year at a place like Manis, you have a sense of specialization? Do they kind of point you in it? Do they say, oh, well, you sound like, your Chopin is so great or your Mendelssohn is so great that we think you might want to, go more in this direction? Or is it pretty much just up to you?
Well, Manis, the reason that I am so happy at Manis, I think, is because I'm definitely starting to figure out what I like doing more, what I'm better at. But Manis definitely pushes you to do everything, really become well-rounded in all aspects of music and all aspects of study before making the ultimate decision of what I would want to pursue for the rest of my life. So Manis is also extremely involved with contemporary music. We have contemporary music ensembles. I think we have 3 different ones. And so they're definitely pushing the new music. And so I was very foreign to that. I was not active within that kind of community.
You're
but this
kind of
year,
a classicist, I'd
right,
say.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's how I've been trained. But as soon as I got there, I was pushed into doing all of these new music things that were written, my God, after 1950. I had no idea I could even do that kind of stuff. I wasn't aware of what was being written.
I mean, composers born after 1950, composers that, born after 1975 in some cases.
Definitely. And I was very very not familiar with any of that. So coming to Manus, I was introduced to it, and now I'm learning to, I really love some of the things that I've been doing with it. And my teacher, she's incredible, first of all, but she also pushes me to do some of the things that I guess I could say that I was a bit reluctant to do at first. Some of the composers that I found more challenging, but she's pushing those more than the ones that I find easier to interpret, which is great for me, which is really great for me.
Well, I guess by definition, she wouldn't have to push as much if this was something you were inclined to do anyway.
Right. But she's been wonderful, and I feel so privileged, so lucky to be with her.
What about these composers and their music that you were reluctant to get involved in?
Well, certain composers are more challenging, I think, in general, but also particular to me. For instance, Bach has always been a real, real strong, very, I've been kind of scared sometimes to attempt it because it's so...
A lot of people are.
It's very contrapuntal. You have to be able to identify each line of the music about what's going on. You have to be able to play them each individually, but then it also has to be unified. It's a very difficult thing to do, especially for me. And I also mentioned I'm not very good at math. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but Bach and math have been kind of related. I don't know, but I've been pushed more to do Bach. Also, early Beethoven it's so difficult.
Early Beethoven, you think is more? Why would it be more difficult than later Beethoven?
Well, later Beethoven, I think, is definitely more difficult to interpret musically because, you know, that's his most mature stage.
Yes.
I think even just, you know, reading some of the works that he's written during that period, I mean, it's very difficult to wrap your head around the psyche and the man.
Yes.
Early Beethoven technically is a challenge.
Why do you suppose that is? Was he just becoming, it's hard to imagine with Beethoven, was he just becoming that much more at one with the instrument? More idiomatic later on?
I think that with his first, like the first period of Beethoven, a lot of it is just showing virtuosity and what the instrument can do,
yes.
do and what the performer's capable of doing.
The new keyboards, yeah.
Right. And it really, and especially with the sonata that I'm going to play later on, I think you'll hear it's running with 16th notes. Just it's fast. It's brilliant. I'll talk more. I don't want to talk about it too much now, but that's what's hard. It's been a challenge for me to do that.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll find out what the challenge and what the payoff are for that Beethoven. But first, you have some Mendelssohn. And Mendelssohn was, of course, no pushover as a keyboard player.
Most definitely
or
not.
A keyboard composer, for that matter. And with a fantasy, so that's one kind of seamless piece without a conventional form.
Right.
And longish as fantasies go. So what about this before we hear it?
Well, as you said, a fantasy, it's not as conventional in its structure. Definitely not as conventional as the other pieces that I'm going to play today. But Franz Liszt actually called Mendelssohn the Mozart of the Romantic period. So this fantasy, and compared to other fantasies, maybe compared to Chopin fantasy, compared to Scriabin's fantasy, it is more classical in its structure. I think that you'll be able to hear the parts that repeat itself throughout. I mean, there are three movements of it, but it is one unified thing. But from the first movement, I think that you'll be able to hear quotes from all of the movements, and then in the third, it wraps it all together. So definitely we'll be able to listen to reoccurring themes and motifs.
So fantasy, but a very tightly structured one. And of course, Mendelssohn was somebody who knew his Bach.
Yes, he did. I have to learn something from him.
He slip any counterpoint in on you?
You'll hear, yes. And there's one section in the third movement where it's contrapuntal, and
you'll hear the one hand playing against the other, and kind of going in diverse directions.
Right.
Well, here it is: the Fantasy in F sharp minor by Mendelssohn, and the pianist live from our Bach studio is Ariella Bolrod. are thousands of people out there applauding right now. Mendelssohn's Fantasy in F sharp minor. I'm reminded of, I think it's a sonata by Schumann where he says in one section, as fast as possible, and then the next section it says faster.
I think that's implied, or maybe it's just what's going through my mind when I'm playing it. Just
yes.
get to the end.
have you ever counted the number of notes in a piece like that?
You know, I have not had the time. I think that might be an all day expenditure, but it would be a fun idea.
Yes, the number of notes that you have to hit exactly at the right time.
There's a lot of those to be accounted for.
Well, bravo! That was a wonderful performance.
Thank you.
Have we talked about synesthesia?
We can talk about that now.
it's a topic that's always worth revisiting because it's so fascinating. The blending in your perception of sound and color.
Right. I never really knew that it was actually that rare of a thing until last year. I didn't even know that there was a name for it because I thought that it was just kind of something that happened. At least it's been happening with me ever since I can remember hearing music. Definitely when I started piano at age 4, I would always associate sound with color. For me, it's particular to the note. Each note has a different color, and then determining which key I'm playing in, or what harmony, whether it be major, minor, diminished, anything like that, the shade of color varies as well.
So actual shades.
Yes, actual shades. It gets to be quite particular. So particular that I don't think my vocabulary is big enough to even tell you
some
of the ranges, right, of colors.
So could you play me a magenta chord right now? Or?
Oh, would you like to hear one?
Yes.
I would love
magenta?
To play.
Magenta? Okay.
Dark magenta or bright?
Oh, let's go dark.
Dark.
Oh, it's dark, sure enough.
Yeah, isn't it dark?
Wow. And so you're actually... where in your mind's eye or something seeing that color?
I mean, I wish it was easy to say that it could just, you know, flit across my eyes, but it doesn't. It's just something kind of that I feel, I guess, to say that I feel the color. It just is very present. It just, when you said dark magenta, I mean, that's the only sound it could be to me.
All right, how about yellow?
Yellow? Simple.
Ah.
But I think that's also, I mean, I think some composers had similar ones to what I see mm-hmm. when I hear the sounds. I know that Scriabin had a whole color wheel of sound.
Oh, sure, and he pioneered, light and sound performances.
Right, and I'm actually really excited I'm doing one of those coming up in this fall, actually. It's the festival at Manus is called Toward the Light, and I'm going to be playing a piece that's for piano and also light show.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that whatever I'm playing that I'm hearing is going to match up with what I'm seeing. Otherwise, it might be quite a clash, quite confusing for me.
Okay, let me just ask one more. How about blue? I mean, you know, of course, blue has such connotations in the language,
right?
You know, for having this certain emotional value to it. But what about for you? Are you seeing blue and you see what it would be, a diminished chord or something?
Well, for me, blue is always the note D. This
That's
note
blue.
Is always blue for me. But depending on the shade, I think of a robin's egg, not a robin's egg blue, no. A very bright blue would be major. I think a dark, smokier blue would be I see a very dark blue when I hear this.
So just a minor chord.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So these colors go through your head when you're playing a Beethoven piano sonata?
Sometimes. This one goes a little too fast, but the second the second movement of this particular sonata, B flat major number 11, that is very full of color for me.
The second movement, that's yes. But you're going to be playing that first?
Oh,
right?
No, I don't have to. Whichever.
I'm just asking because I think you were going to play, let's see.
First and second movement.
Oh, first and second. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was thinking it was second and third. Okay, so the first movement, too fast for color. What else can you tell us about it?
Well, Beethoven actually said about this sonata, up until this sonata, he said that this one, this particular one that I'm about to play, this one takes the cake.
This was his favorite.
And I think it's kind of an homage, kind of a tip of the hat to the Gallant style, the traditional Gallant style, which is very playful, very graceful, very elegant.
Untroubled?
I'm sorry?
Untroubled.
Yes, untroubled. But then Beethoven, as we know, loves to contrast things that are very cute with things that are very not cute. Uh-huh. Which is very dramatic. The Sturm und Drang, which is another style of Beethoven's. He does this in the sonata throughout the piece, but definitely the first movement is a very good example of those contrasts.
All right, we'll start with the first movement then. This is Piano Sonata number 11.
Yes.
Thank you.
I agree.
Charming piece. I'm not sure it ever came out quite so charming for me.
Oh, thank you.
First movement of Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 11 in B-flat, the pianist, live in our Buck studio today for the midday, Ariella Bolrod. And we'll hear more from Beethoven and from Ariella, and also from Liszt and Schumann right after this, and our quiz question on WPR. Now, well, as long as we're on this color theme, Ariella, just kind of talk us through briefly the colors that we're going to hear, at least that you're going to be seeing in this second movement of the Beethoven.
I think in general, I see kind of a, I guess, burnt sienna color.
Oh, one of my favorite Crayola colors.
Really? Okay. Well, mine too. I'm glad that
we share that. One thing.
For me, I think I feel that way because it's a very warm color. It's a very, it's a very warm color. I think about, when I hear this piece, I think about fire. I think about a hearth. I think about being in a warm home in a cozy bed or something. And for some reason, that color also comes to mind. And for the whole piece, it's kind of like that for me. Also, I want to say for just people listening at home, when you hear this piece, I like to imagine this being a singer with piano accompaniment. I think this movement is quite vocal. I think it could be sung easily. When I was learning the notes to it, I would actually sing along with myself. I hope a better singer would be singing it though than that, because it was not great. But it's very vocal with the breath of the piece, the movement of it. It really is. It's a song. That's how I think of it. And then the left hand is just a light piano accompaniment to it.
Here we go. Second movement. Thank you. Second movement of Beethoven's Piano Sonata number 11 in B-flat. The pianist Ariella Bowrider reminds me a little bit of the slow movement of his third piano sonata with that lovely kind of lilt to it.
Also
a beautiful piece to look into. We're going to do something a little bit different during this hour of the midday. For time's sake, what we'll do this, if you're game, Ariella, is we're going to defer the last piece until after 1 o'clock, which means we're going to put that on our website.
Okay.
And treat that as kind of an encore, which it certainly is worthy of being when you have Liszt and Schumann boiled into the same 4-minute piece.
Yes.
So at the ripe old age of, what is it, 19 years and 4 days?
19 and 4 days. Yep, that's right.
what's your upcoming plan for the summer?
I'm leaving Wisconsin on Wednesday, and I'm going back to New York, and I'm going to attend the Manus Keyboard Institute and Festival, which is sponsored by my school, and that's a 2-week-long festival, and then I'll be taking lessons with my regular piano professor, also in New York, and then I get to go to China. I get to go to Beijing with my piano teacher, and she teaches also at a festival in China. So I'll be there for 2 weeks as well.
And what will you be doing in Beijing for 2 weeks?
In Beijing, I will be taking lessons. I'll be playing in master classes, performing, and then also seeing some of the amazing sites that there are. Great Wall, Tiananmen Square. I'm very excited about
it. You've been over there before, I thought, right?
I went there last summer, same festival. But this time I'm hoping I get to perform even more, take even more lessons, take advantage of all there is that can be offered.
And sort of what's the next peg on the wall here as you climb toward the top of pianodom? What's your next goal? What's your next piece that you want to tackle?
My next piece. Currently, I'm really interested. I'm playing Kapustin. Contemporary composer from Ukraine, and he does all jazz-inspired contemporary music. So I'm tackling some of his etudes, and also Beethoven Sonata 109. So one of the last three.
Let's see. I can't remember the opus numbers. I remember the numbers.
Third to last one. E major.
So 30. Mm-hmm. Okay. So also some of that later Beethoven that you've talked about.
Yes.
And what do you play when you're just sitting around the house? Is there such a thing?
What do I play? I play some of my old favorites, but I like to sight read a lot. I like to just see about new music that I can discover, get my hands on.
Are you getting into this jazz thing at all?
I'd like to. I'm no good at improv, but...
Well, that's true. That is kind of a key component to jazz.
That's why
it?
I'm doing the stuff that's been already written down. The notes have already been written on the page, so I cannot be asked
that's why
to write anything myself.
That's why they call it classical, isn't it? Because it's written down.
Classical contemporary, right.
Well, best of luck with all of those adventures.
Thank you so much.
And we'll look forward to your next visit here. And don't forget, we're going to hold you to that encore, which, as I say, we'll provide on our website. If you go to WPR.org, and we should have it there, I don't know, sometime later today, I think. And you can hear the razzle-dazzle of Liszt and Schumann together. This is not a particularly well-known piece by Schumann. It's from a collection called Myrtles, meaning, you know, youthfulness. He dedicated it to Clara. And it's got the title of Widmung, or dedication. Originally, it was a song, I mean, for singer and piano. But what does Liszt do? He's notorious for souping things up. What does Liszt do to make this just a piano piece?
Yes, Liszt transcribes this piece for piano. And as you said, Liszt likes to soup things up a bit. So he makes it a very virtuosic piece for piano toward the end of the piece. There are running 16th notes everywhere, and then big momentous chords at the very end to finish it off. But I think, honestly, Liszt is a bit more tame when it comes to this transcription than of the other transcriptions that I've at least played by him. I know his transcription of Rigoletto, I think he really goes a little bit wild with, but I think he's tamer than he is with some other things when it comes to this.
Thank you.
thought I even heard little strains of Schubert's Ave Maria in there a little bit of everything, but really fascinating blend of the Liszt style and the Schumann style.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear, I think, at least I could, two voices intertwined there.
At least, yes. No, I love playing this piece. It's one of my favorites to play.
Well, Ariella Borod, thanks for sharing it with us for the midday today.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Hurry back.
I will. Have me back soon.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio.